Good evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo. K2 Romeo, India Whiskey. This time we begin the second as we've done for lots of years since 1982. Main purpose of the TechNet is to gather curious radio amateurs who teach each other more the inner secrets of wireless equipment, transmitters, receivers, transmission lines, propagation, all of that jazz. The 27 different kinds of ham radio. The TechNet is broken up into three sections, as you've heard me say before. The first section is where people sign in because they do have a question or a comment, and they give me their call letters, their name, try not to forget that. Followed by the word yes, meaning you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in just because you're listening. After 37 years, we believe somebody is listening. The second section of the TechNet is run by Roy, AC2GS, who gives us the mailbag and science talk. And the third section is run by Paul, WS2N, who gives us a space report. And he's got quite a few space reports things to report tonight. If the number of people signing in with questions and comments is light, I've got a very difficult puzzle for you guys. And if there's not enough time, we'll put that off until next week. So at this time, we're going to take check-ins. If you do have a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name right now. I've already got Craig, KD2, OGB, signed in. Anybody else? K2RIW, listening.
Enter Rio, Dick, with a comment, but mainly a question.
Okay, we got Craig and Rich. Anyone else to sign in? Give me your call letters and name right now. One last call. Anyone else to sign in because they got a question or a comment for the TechNet? Give me a call letters and name right now. Okay, maybe not. And Craig, are you there? KD2, old gray beard. K2, how are you? Go ahead, Craig, if you're there.
I sure am, KD2OGB. First things first, am I copying well? I'm in my basement this time and not my room.
You sound quite good, so please proceed, Craig.
Alrighty. So, my question, well, first it's going to be a comment and then a question. So, I had a friend come over about half a year ago, and I was considering this one of these days, when the time finally comes to get my actual station set up, and I can't set up anything directly to the house. Looking at possible places to put up an HF antenna in a tree, and I was even considering to build one. And what I want to do is, the room that I want to put it in, there's two windows. One faces to the west, one faces to the north, and the backyard is to the south. What I want to do is set up the station near the west window, and here's how I want to do the setup for an antenna. Is he considered to run the coax cable or so, and then zip line it across to the tree for the HF antenna?
If I understand you correctly, you're going to run the wire from a tree to the window. Is that what you're saying, Craig? Go ahead.
Yeah, what I want to do is zip line it across from the window to the tree. And I was wondering, are there any advantages and disadvantages to doing this kind of a setup? And if neighbors would probably see this kind of setup? KD2OGB.
Okay, most wire antennas, people do not see them. We amateurs know to look for them. And there's nothing magic about feeding your wire antenna in the center. With a little bit of electronic smart, you can feed it from the open end. So if one end's going to go to the tree and the other end's going to go to the window, you can feed the antenna at the window end. The only slight disadvantage of that is that at the open end of when you feed it, it's got an impedance of about 2,000 ohms. You'll need an LC network, an inductor and a capacitor, with just the right amount of capacitance and inductance to step up the impedance from 50 ohms to the 2,000 ohms, and you can feed it from the open end. So there's nothing magic about feeding a dipole in the center. You can feed it in the center, halfway from center to the end, or the end. So that way they would see no zip line at all. They see nothing but a piece of wire, which will be very invisible. Except for that LC network you've got to feed, it's a fairly simple it's an unpopular technique because people don't know about it, Craig. KD2OGB, K2RIW. My name is Dick.
Okay, very good. All right, so I'll look into that. Now, the thing, though, is, and I might be restricted on, I think, 80 meters or something, because the tree that I'm looking to set this on is 100 feet away from the deck, and I'm looking into running probably, like, maybe 100 feet or so, or maybe 75 feet of coax cable from the top of the branches of where I'm going to hook it up, probably, to the window. And at the same time, I was considering 2-meter 440 in the attic, my friend suggested. I just got to find routing to how I could get a coax cable up there and a fiberglass antenna up there. Any thoughts on that?
There's nothing stopping you from taking that 100 foot of lens between your window and the tree and making an antenna that works on 80 meters. It might require a loading coil to give it a little bit of extra length, or you can take the end of the wire, fold it down, zigzag it, put top hat capacitors, loading coils. There's all kinds of ways you can make the length electronically 80 meters half wave, if you know what I mean. And even if it's not 80 meters half wave, you can make up that difference with the network, which is an LC network that's feeding it at the open end. And you'd like to be using a antenna tuner, but there's lots of ways of feeding that. Zigzagging it, folding the ends, loading coils, top hat capacitors. There's lots of ways that you can make 100 feet of wire act like 130 feet of wire, which would be halfway resonant electronically. Over to you, Craig, K2RIW.
All right, good ideas. I'll provide this to my friend next time I see him. My original method, which I was considering, which would probably be stupid, was to do this in my old playhouse. But the problem is, it's about 15, 18 years old, and it's all wood-based, and the roof is, like, I guess, shingles, but it's not going to adapt to the temperatures. You'd have to get, like, a heater and an air conditioner and make it all adaptive to to Mother Nature outside. It would not be doable in a playhouse, I would assume, right?
Once again, where is the playhouse located, Craig?
Roughly around the same place as where I was going to hang this tree, but I find it would be not suitable because, again, you'd have to, because you're exposing yourself to extreme temperatures, unless I were to bring it, like, inside and out each and every time I go to use it, and I don't feel like doing it. I'd rather just have it in one convenient location up in one of the old bedrooms that I have.
You know, what's stopping you from doing all your ham radio operation from that west window that you've been describing? What makes you think you have to use the playhouse, which I presume is on the ground? Go ahead.
Well, the playhouse I originally got when I was very little, but I don't use it anymore. But now we use it for storage, and there's only like a couple things in there, but I'd have to clear everything out. I'd have to redo everything. It's just a big mess. I'd rather do it inside the house directly and just basically find a spot for an antenna outside. And that's what the parents agreed to, and it's just a matter of when.
What makes you think you've got to use the playhouse? What's stopping you from running your whole operation from that western window? Go ahead.
Nothing's stopping me. It's just, I just got to plan it out when I'm going to be able to do it. I'm just trying to figure out, ideas of what my friend came up with in the past on how to hook all this stuff up in that area and then just set it all out in the tree that I was planning on.
Okay, from your western window, you don't have to run just one wire. You could run a number of wires of a number of different lengths favoring your different bands, going to the south end of the tree, the north end of the tree, and maybe another tree, or maybe even a sloper to the ground. You could, as I see it, run your whole operation from that western window. There's nothing stopping you from doing that with the right kind of philosophy and electronic setup. Over to you, Craig, K2LIW.
B2OGB. Sounds about right. One other idea, which I've seen a couple people do, and I know one friend that has this, is to hook up 2-meter 440, and I don't know how they could have done this. Somehow they have the fiberglass antenna, like, near the chimney. I don't know how that stuff could be possible. Do you have any ideas on how a setup like that is usually doable? I'm not into doing that. I just want to do it through the attic.
Many vertically polarized antennas for 2 meters and 440 are mounted on the top of a pole. The pole itself has got a strap-type window, a strap-type a chimney mount, as if it was a television aerial. And then from the bottom of that goes a coax cable brought into the house by whatever means you want. So mounting a 2 meter or 440 vertically polarized antenna to a chimney is a very typical operation, quite easy to do, as long as you're able to climb onto that roof or get somebody to climb onto that roof for you. Over to you, Craig, K2RIW.
WB2GXM.
GXM, go ahead.
Craig, how long is your attic?
Attic? Not really sure off the top of my head. I have about maybe 30 feet or so, I guess, of room up there. And about, I don't know the dimensions exactly, but it's like 30 feet or so, and I'm probably looking at 12, 13 feet upwards.
Do you get CQ magazine?
I'm not sure exactly what that is.
He may be able to find that issue in a good library. Back to you, Rich.
Okay, because CQ Magazine has an article this month, which is the second article they've published on what they call a Sabre V antenna, which is nothing more than a regular dipole which has been wound around a paint stick to turn it into a sawtooth shape. And they claim you can fit 140 feet of dipole into a 50-foot space. So you may be able to fit a full 80-meter dipole into your attic. And the only caveat with that is that it may be advisable to run QRP on that, maybe no more than 20 watts or so. WB2GXM.
Very much like HF, it's just a wire antenna for a dipole. Is that right, Dick? KD2OGB.
It is a wire dipole. It is just kinked to reduce the overall length. I assume there's a little bit of linear loading going on there, too, but that's not really important if you're using an antenna tuner with your dipole. You could probably fit 80 meters into your attic. Or, well, outside, you'd need to worry about the construction. WB2GXM.
Yeah, outside, you've got to be a little bit careful about the fact that the tree will sway, and no matter how you use the tree as a mounting structure, there's got to be some kind of a pulley spring or whatever to accommodate the tree moving back and forth and tugging on the wire. But there's lots of ways of getting around that one. Or the wire itself could be a sloper going down to the ground toward the top of a fence post or something like that. Sloper wire antennas also work very well. Back to you, Craig, K2LIW.
That could work. Would it also make more sense if you're running the wire straight down to the ground to maybe throw it underground and then just have it come up toward where the tree would be?
No, I don't recommend that. You want as much of the wire as possible above ground, straight out to the tree, sloping down to a fence post or whatever. So, once again, if you're willing to feed the wire from the output, from the open end, the end closest to the window, which you can do, it's unpopular, people don't know it works. You can feed a dipole anywhere you want, as long as you've got the right kind of feeding network. And there could be multiple wires. You could have one wire the right length for 80 meters, one for 40 meters, and one for 20 meters, and so on. So, wire, you and I see wire. Your neighbors don't see wire. They would see the ladder line, but they're not going to see the wire of the antennas themselves. On top of that, if they do see wire, are they going to say that that's obstructing their view of the sky, and therefore they're against it? I kind of doubt it. Over to you, Craig, K2LIW.
I got a comment, Dick, and Tuio.
Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, well, I agree with you, Dick. Feeding it too far at one end is good. The wire should be up, Craig, as high as possible in the clear. The attic may have too much absorption, but the best thing from the west window to the tree is a way of getting around the problem with the tree swaying and breaking the wire. What I've seen in the ARRL handbook, they put a pulley up. A small pulley, and on the tree, they take the rope from the opposite, after the insulator at the end of the wire, put the rope to a pulley, and then put a fishing weight on the far end toward the ground. This way, when the tree sways, the pulley will let the rope go back and forth. Also, Dick, I would recommend to Craig, treat it like he said at the west window. He doesn't have to build an LC network. He's only running 100 watts. He could use an inexpensive NFJ antenna tuner. The cost may be $130 or so. And under $150 for sure. A small tuner. I know Barry owns one of those tuners. It's only good for a couple hundred watts, but he's happy with it and pay much for it, Dick. Back to you.
Why use an external tuner? I already have one built into my 480 SAT.
Okay, Craig. The tuners built into the radios are very limited in range. They only match like a 3-to-1. Like if you had a beam antenna cut for CW and you wanted to use it on sideband, the upper portion of the band, SWR might be 2 or 3-to-1 and the tuner could bring it down to 0. But more than that, it's not much good. What I found is just turn off through the menu the internal tuner and use an external one from which has a good wide range. What do you think, Dick?
Yeah, I agree with Rich that an external tuner tends to have a lot more dynamic range than the ones that are built in. The ones that are built in are kind of limited. And like you say, maybe 3-to-1 is the max they can tolerate. With careful tuning at your particular frequency with the right LC network, you can make the impedance match of the antenna as perfect as you like. By the way, by way of various curves and formulas, you can estimate what the impedance of the antenna is going to be when you feed it from the open end, or if you can borrow somebody's antenna analyzer, you can actually measure the real impedance, and once you know that impedance, you go to a website which is labeled Berkeley plus impedance match. You Google the word Berkeley and impedance match, and tell it what impedance the antenna is that you've measured or calculated, and it'll tell you exactly what LC network to build. It'll tell you how many microhenries and how many picofarads of capacitance and what kind of a hookup. It'll give you 10 or 12 different solutions immediately once you know what you're feeding. So as I said, it's a little bit unconventional to feed the open end, but in your case, mechanically, once you solve that problem electronically, it would work very nicely on each one of your bands. Over to you, Craig, K2LIW.
Okay. So an external tuner is what I would need, and I would also need an analyzer. I'll pass that around. And Rich, when you mentioned about the pulley and putting, I guess, maybe a counterweight on it or something, that's actually what my friend suggested.
Yeah, lots of hands have done that, and it works very well, Craig.
Yes, it does. And, Craig, I know Dick is encouraging you to build it, but Dick, he's a beginner. And maybe it's easy for me, easy for you, but maybe not for Craig. For $100-some-odd, maybe less, I don't know the exact price, he should go on the MFJ Enterprises website. Go to mfjenterprises.com. Take a look. They got their whole catalog on the net. Look up antenna tuners.
At this assume what you're trying to do, Craig, is operate on a number of the HF bands as well as 2 meters and 450. Is that true? Go ahead. K2LIW.
K2OGB, yes. 2 meter and 440, I've done the most. I've only done 40 meters once when I attended the picnic, and I haven't really done any other bands. But yeah, 40, 80, 10, 20, and 6, although 6 VHF. Definitely all the bands that I'd like to do HF-wise.
With enough smarts and the right setup, with what you've got, you can do it. I didn't say it's easy, and it doesn't have to work perfectly at first. The first few kinds of antennas you try are going to require some tinkering to get the bugs out of it, you know what I mean, mechanically and electronically. But once you know that there is a solution in that manner, and you just keep working at it, and you keep coming back to the TechNet and tell us, hey, I tried this, and this is the results I've got, and we'll tell you what to do next. So step by step, you'll get there, Craig. KD2OGB, K2IW.
It will take some time before this stuff is finally put into place, but I'll update you guys down the road if I may have, like, another question on something else or something maybe I could try. In the meantime, until I can get a permanent setup, but it would be good. The last thing I'd like to ask is, what would be the benefit of actually building an HF antenna for this setup, or would I rather just actually get something?
Well, building an antenna for 80 meters is stringing a piece of wire between insulators, and depending on where you put the feed line, makes a bit of a difference. So building an antenna for 80 meters, 40 meters, 20 meters, in your case, a sloper or a wire to the tree with a pulley, that's easy. You can buy various antennas that are all ready to go, but like the Cobra compact dipole that Rich is using right now, but I think that's something like a $100 investment. What was the price of that Cobra antenna you got there, Rich? N2EO, K2IW?
It was about a little over 100, covers 80 through 10. It only sees the ladder line in the center.
Yes,
Yeah, go ahead there, Rich.
Also, the Cobra, the instructions specifically state it requires an antenna tuner. It's a very good antenna, but you need an antenna tuner. I have another. I have a further comment, WB2GXM.
Yeah, so whether or not Craig is willing to buy an antenna tuner right now and buy an antenna, as opposed to the wire itself is only a couple of dollars worth of wire, if you know what I mean. So building the antenna can be very inexpensive. And the LC network, the inductor will be some number of turns of wire on a PVC pipe as a coil, and the capacitor itself is the only thing that will require a little bit more study as to how to build or buy the right capacitor. Rich, go ahead with your further comment, K2IW.
Also, Craig, building a dipole that's set at the center is very, very simple. Save a lot of money, get whatever wire you need, whatever, feed it with ladder line. An end-fed antenna, and Rich or Dick may disagree with me, but I've seen and read a lot about this, where an end-fed antenna requires a matching network that's very tricky. You might do well to actually buy an end-fed antenna rather than make one. Center-fed dipoles are a different matter and very simple. WB2GXM.
I agree with that.
Yeah, you will require some tinkering to find the right LC network to feed the end. But it's not expensive in hardware. The wire is cheap. The LC network can be fabricated fairly inexpensively. And so after a little bit of tinkering, you'll get there. It doesn't have to be perfect at first. The transmitter is not going to explode just because you're feeding it into a high standing wave ratio. We haven't quite hit resonance yet. The antenna tuner, though, an external antenna tuner, is a fairly valuable thing when it comes to various antennas like the ones that we're discussing, because the antenna tuner built in, as Rich has already told us, is fairly limited in range. Rarely do they go beyond 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, and there are some portions of the band where you're going to exceed 3-to-1. It's OGB, K2LIW. Go ahead, Craig.
N1LF.
Stand by, N1LF. I'll start off with your name and tell us your comment. K2LIW, my name is Dick.
Yeah, sorry, Dick, I got interrupted. N1LF, Bravo over here in Greenwich, Connecticut. Been a different call signs there, but I'm the first responder firefighter over here in Greenwich. A couple times I helped out there and generators, grills, whatever, for, you know, safety there and all types of fire discussions there, especially around generator times when blackouts in cold weather. N-fed wire. That was my first wire that I had here at my location, 20 feet at each end. Just a piece of 135 feet down one end and 15 feet into the house. Drilled through the windowsill here with a wing nut so I can attach it with a Johnson Viking matchbox, the 250, the little one. Butted up against the window and then fed that in with coax. That kept the RF out there, keeping that box there against the window. So I worked the entire world with that piece of wire there. So that's one way of doing it, but you got to keep that matchbox against the window. If you try to feed it in with just one piece of wire coming in, there's kind of all RF. Back to you.
So it sounds, Bob, like you had a successful end-fed wire antenna. How high up was it? And I presume the majority of it was outdoors, like 20 or 30 feet above the ground. And I think you're saying you used it on what bands and how many countries did you say you worked? Back to you, Bob, N1LF, K2IW.
Yeah, N1LF there. All right, it was originally 20 feet at each end, WB1SFHH there up in Armonk there, Buff, who was also another firefighter right up the street from me. And he came over and said, use an end-fit. I put it at 20 feet at each end originally, and I worked the entire world, all the way to Australia, Africa, going through different call signs, hundreds if not thousands of things there, and running, at the time I think I was running a TS-480 HX, 180 watts there. And I ran everything from, except for six, from 10 to 80, because that's all the matchbox would do, and that's all I ran. But I contacted a lot of countries, Dick, and then we got it up at about 75 feet at the other end, so it's a sloper, 20 feet. So, until later on, a couple years later on, I put the balanced dipole in, which I'm working now, and a 60-meter T antenna configuration there for 160. And but yeah, don't give up. You know, there's balance and stuff that people use and kind of tuners, but I did have to get up from the radio operating station there and go over there and, you know, tune the antenna, but I put a foot switch that ran over to the radio so I could key up in front of the tuner there and tune it there. So it was a little difficult to jumping around bands, but it did work.
Okay, this is an end-fed wire antenna, and you keep telling us you had 20 feet on each end. Nice words, we don't know what that means. How long was the wire? What do you mean by 20 feet each end? Are you saying the wire dropped down at a 90-degree angle, 20 feet at each end? Over to you, Bob, K2IW.
All right, sorry about that. I'm trying to multitask here with background interference going on. No, it was 20 feet height at each end. That was the original start, and I worked the entire world with that. And that's what my friend Bob told me. He says, do that. He says, it's either going to work, it's not. He says, he worked the entire world at 20 feet at each end, which basically in AM we call it a worm warmer. Not too high there, but no. He said, the matchbox was butted right up against the window. That's where the 15 feet of wire, 12 gauge wire came up to the 20 foot part of the pole, and then that was attached to 135 feet down the other end of the yard there, because that's all property line that I got here to put that in there. And for two, three, maybe 4 years, I operated on that for the longest time. Sideband, AM, you know, no CW, but it worked for many years until I went to a full dipole.
So your piece of wire was 135 feet long, and which bands did you feed that on from the open end? Go ahead.
All right, we took a coil, and we also attached a coil to put a little extension on there because a couple of bands weren't working. It was just a piece of PVC pipe and maybe an inch and a half with, I forget how many winds of 12 gauge. So we put a light switch in between so I can flip up. And I went for, and that matchbox doesn't do the work band, so I had to just go in between the bands there and end up tuning. All the way from 10 dick all the way up to 80 meters that I was able to work all those bands. And when you left.
So as you can see, Craig, a end fed piece of wire, just one piece of wire with the right kind of impedance matching networks can be used on lots of bands. Or you can make a much simpler impedance matching network if you have a wire for each one of the bands you care about and multiple wires coming together. So with some experimentation, end feeding will eliminate any feed line that the neighbors can see. But even feed line seeing the neighbor seeing it on your property, I think it's very rare that a neighbor is going to say, gee, that's ugly looking and it's obstructing the view of my sky from my house. So we amateurs worry a lot more than we should. We see wire, most people do not. KD2OGB, KD2OGB, K2IW, great, Craig. You'll have much more questions about this subject as you start developing these techniques downrange. Wait for the beeps.
I have a comment to WH2CDO.
Yeah, stand by, Craig. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, good evening. I've been listening in. Craig, we've spoken before. This is Andy. And I don't know how mechanically inclined you are. You know, you showed me the installation in your car. Two things. I would encourage you to build the antenna rather than buying it, only for the experience of it. And I think you would appreciate it and enjoy it more if you made it from scratch. And also, where you work, and you've mentioned where you work, has most of the materials that you need to build this antenna. The other thing is, if you need insulators for the antenna, either porcelain, plastic, or glass, I have hundreds of them. And I will give you as many insulators as you need to make your dipole or long wire or whatever you want to make. These are good quality insulators that are used for these antennas. So I'm offering you as many as you need because I have quite a few. So I just thought I'd throw that in. Go ahead, Dick, WHCDL.
Comment N1 Whitey White.
Flat here.
Whitey White, go ahead.
Thank you again, Dick. And, hello, Andy. It's good to see you at the Nutmeg and Meriden Hamfest. Definitely a pleasure here. And what was I going to say? Yes. Build it yourself if you can. 14-gauge wire, and one of my little tricks of doing that is, you know, 14-gauge stranded wire, 19 strands usually comes there. You can buy that at Home Depot. That's what I did. I changed my antenna out every 3 years anyway. So just make sure you take that wire and take the insulated part of that wire and run it through the insulator, then strip it at the end, and then strip the antenna, the rest of the wire, and maybe use about maybe four inches or so, a little bit lower, longer, and wrap that in there, solder that heavy, that'll make it really strong, and flip on some shrink tubing first, and then coat it with the electric tape there. I love that stuff. I buy them by the gross, and then slide your shrink tubing over and heat it up there, and there you go. It's so, yeah. But one thing I always tell HF operators, newbies there, and you're going to start building antennas, the one best thing that you can have in your shack is an antenna analyzer. And MFJ makes a very fine one, probably one of their better projects of everything. And that will help you solve a lot of things. You just don't test antenna tuners. It'll tell you if your antenna is 50 ohms, the SWRs, where it's resident, and it goes on and on. All right, I'm going to start doing my old AM buzzer transmission. Sorry about that. But I heard that in there. And Dick, I haven't talked to you in a while. Andy, we talked off in there. So 7-3s, guys, and good luck with the dipole. N1F, back to you, Dick.
Yeah, thank you for the information, Bob. I'm trying to turn it over to Hank. N1YDY, go ahead, Hank.
I think Bob just covered everything I was going to say, especially the 14-gauge stranded wire. I know a lot of guys talk about using that copper-clad steel wire that you see in the back of ARRL publications, but in my limited experience before I ended up in a condo, that stuff never lasted as long as the inexpensive Home Depot stuff. And I really like the Bob's suggestion for how to attach the ends. And one Whitey White clear.
Okay, I thank you, Hank. As you can see, Craig, A lot of hams develop an awful lot of pride and appreciation for building the antenna themselves. It'll take some tinkering. It won't be perfect at first, but it doesn't have to be. The transmitters nowadays are pretty well protected, so it's not going to explode if you put it onto an antenna that's not perfectly matched at first. KD2OGB, K2RIW, Greg Craig.
KD2OGB, getting a lot of good ideas off of this, and this is exactly what my friend Don, NCQHV, suggested, and this is exactly what I want to hopefully work on. Probably, I definitely would not want to work on it at this time of season, but if I ever have free time next summer, I definitely want to get started on this project and really get it done. So that way, well, I'm hoping to have my station set up before that, but I'd like to get this project done before. And I would definitely assume this is all very cost-effective and very affordable and very easy for me to do. I thank you guys all for the extra help. And this concludes my topic. KD2OGB, back to you, Dick.
Hey, you don't have to wait for the right season to put up an antenna. Yeah, you're not going to do it on a snowy, rainy day in the winter. But even in the wintertime, you occasionally have a sunny, warm day in which you can build up antennas. I've done some of my best antenna work in the winter. So one time I was up my tower, a 100-foot tower, and it started snowing. And it snowed hard enough that I could no longer see the ground below me. So that was a kind of a funny feeling. Every direction I looked, I just saw white snow, if you know what I mean. But some of my best antenna work has been done in the wintertime. So don't let the weather slow you down if you're in the mood to do it at that time. Rich was the next person on the list, N2EO, K2RIW, good, Rich.
Oh, okay, Dick, and so we are. We'll say good evening to everybody. I'm going to mention something first. I'm being helped with a social worker from JAFA, Jewish Association for the Aged. And the reason I'm bringing it up, I got a question for Roy. By the way, that'll help anybody. You don't have to be Jewish. You can be anything. It's free of charge. They're funded by grants, donations. So the reason I'm bringing that up, Dick, the social worker that comes here has got an application to make Marshmallow the Cat a therapy animal. Well, I'd like to know from Roy, is that the same statue as a guide dog? Because my big worry is that if I have to go into the hospital, there'll be nobody to take care of the cat. So I'd like to know, is it up to the hospital's discretion if he's registered as a therapy pet? Is it the law or what? Maybe I'll turn it back to you, Dick, N2EO.
If I understand you correctly, Rich, you'd like to have Marshmallow, your cat, described as a helpful animal, and you want to import that animal into the hospital with you. Boy, that sounds very doubtful. A dog, maybe. A specifically trained dog. But a cat in a hospital, I don't think they're going to allow that. Let me turn it over to Roy. He's probably got some further words on this one. That's fine. That strikes me as a long shot. AC2GS, K2RIW. Go ahead, Roy.
Thank you, Dick. Yeah, I would doubt that. I guess it's a kind of an individual situation, but I think that that would be very dubious in a hospital environment. There are a lot of things going on in hospitals, and they let tabby cats run around. I don't know.
Dick, good morning.
A guide dog, maybe. A cat, I don't think you stand a chance. Go ahead, Rich. Wait for the beeps.
Okay, guys. Well, I can say this about him. He doesn't run around like an alley cat. I've got him trained. He knows his name. And if I call him, he comes to me. In fact, most of the time, even if he just sees me, he jumps into my lap. So I got that on my side.
Yeah, you know that, and your cat is very friendly to you. no matter what words you say, no matter what proof you supply, I don't think the hospital is going to allow you to bring a cat into the hospital with you. Over to you, Rich.
Okay, well, I don't know. And I'd like to know from Roy. I have to be interviewed in order to qualify. A doctor has to sign that he's a therapy animal. In particular, it has to be a psychiatrist. One visit. He has to say, interview me, and then sign off on it. Do you know anything about that, Roy?
Not particularly, because I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't even play one on the radio. But it makes perfectly good sense. I mean, he should be able to assess you and your needs and document whether or not it's appropriate.
But even with that declared as a therapy animal, I am extremely skeptical that any cat would be allowed in the hospital as a therapy animal. You've spent a lot of your life in hospitals. I'll bet you've never seen a therapy cat in a hospital. Is that true, Roy? Go ahead, Roy.
I've never seen that. I haven't seen too many therapy animals in hospital environments, especially, sterile ones, intensive care ones. I mean, that would just be a mess. I assume that it, to a degree, it's up to the administration and the staff, but I would be shocked if that's a ongoing practice. It doesn't strike me as a good thing for the rest of the patients.
This is TechNet.
And you've seen therapy dogs in hospitals. Is that what you're saying, Roy? Go ahead.
Not actually with patients. I don't think I can recall a single case where we had a therapy dog sitting there by the bedside. My experience as far as service animals is non-existent. I'm trying to remember if I had any experience with sight disabled people with seeing eye dogs. I've seen them in clinic settings, but I don't recall seeing them even in hospitals, although it's very possible that they're allowed.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave this subject here, Rich. You said you've got another real technical question, so go ahead with that one, Rich. N2EO, K2IW.
No technical question. No, I never said that. What I meant was I had this question for Roy. Anyway, like I said, anybody who's up in years, I'll be 70. In April. I know it's not part of the tech deck, but I want to help people. If you need a social worker because they know how to fill out forms for things that the average person doesn't know, they're trained. Call JASA. Look them up on the internet, JASA, Jewish Association for the Aged. They're very good. They don't charge. They work on donations. And the best social worker I ever had is the one I have now from JASA. So I'm just recommending that because there's a lot of people listening, I think. And so we have K2RIW, and so we help go on to the next person.
Okay, let's see if we have anyone else to sign in which has a question or a comment for the TechNet tonight. Please give me call letters and name right now. K2RIW listening.
Hello, Dick. Chat WB2AHK.
Go ahead, Chet.
Hi, everybody. There was an article... The GXM related current issue of CQ magazine this month about a saber tooth antenna. It's been around for a couple of years, and the authors had a in 2018 had also an article in CQ magazine about it. What it is a method of shortening HF antennas. I want to go into that and ask you your ideas. Let me let it drop.
Yeah, Chad, when you describe it to me, why do they call it saber tooth? What's the method of shortening? Is it zigzagging, helical winding, whatever? So try to give us a physical description so that we get a mental picture. You've got it, Chad. Wait for the beeps.
Right. He calls it a saber tooth because he has experimented with, it's like oscilloscope patterns, sine waves, square waves, and triangles. And the antenna is supported by, let's say, a Dacron rope. Let's say it's 60 foot long. And he has built triangles into it, right across the whole span with a ladder line in the middle. And these triangles are not very large. And they make the actual length of the wire double the 60 foot. So he claims that it could work on quite well on 40 meters and 75 meters. So he had an idea of lengthening the antenna by using triangles, one after the other, after the other, after the other, supported on a Dacron rope, any kind of rope with tie wraps, and it makes the antenna twice as long in the same space. A shorter space, in other words, let's say 60 foot, 64 foot, and it would become the equivalent of 128 foot for 75 meters. Go ahead.
So I think you're saying that the wire is bent into semicircles, we'll say, and it periodically touches the Dacron rope and is held there with tie wrap, and so you build up a whole lot of these wire loops, if I understand, wire half loops, maybe 30 of them along the length or something like that. Chet, go ahead. Try to describe to us what the wire is doing with reference to the rope and the tie wraps. WB2AHK, K2RIW.
TXM.
Yeah, right. He had a method of making these triangles, these angles, and TXM mentioned a paint stick, but that's not important. There was also another method of making these triangles. He made it into triangles, there was another method of making these triangles where you get like a board, a 2x4, and you put nails in it, finishing nails, and you bend the wire into triangular shapes, and you try to make an antenna with triangles, which actually physically doubles the amount of wire. In the same space, the length. In other words, let's say you have a 40-meter length of Dacron rope, whatever kind of rope you're going to use, and the triangles, the copper triangles, your copper wire, are held to the rope with tie wraps. And if you make enough triangles, you could actually double the amount of copper wire in the same length space hanging up in the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, to keep calling these triangles doesn't complete a picture. A triangle made out of wire would have three sides to it. I'm guessing that these wire triangles don't have three sides. They only have two sides, and they're really a kind of a sawtooth zigzag. Is that true, Chet? Go ahead.
Yeah,
that's right, Dick. It's like an oscilloscope pattern. There's two sides to it, and you would catch the tie rope at the top of the next succeeding triangle. Well, I call it a triangle, but it's a zigzag. Let's say you look at an oscilloscope pattern. You have a square wave, you have a sine wave, and then you have, let's say you have a triangular wave going across the oscilloscope face. And so he says that the best ones would be the triangles. Go ahead. I'm calling it triangles, but it's a zigzag pattern, like a sawtooth pattern. Go ahead.
Yeah, sawtooth, I think, comes closer. Rich, go ahead with your description.
KGRIW, the group, WZ2GXM.
Chad, nice to see you. Nice to hear from you, guy. I've been reading that with a lot of interest. It is a sawtooth shape. and you can get that sawtooth shape any way you want. You can wind the wire around a pain stick and then flatten it. You can use a form. The ultimate result is a wire that is bent to a sawtooth shape. The article mentions using packing tape. You put the finished product down on the packing tape, put another piece of packing tape over it, and you wind up with a wire inside packing tape. I must stress the fact that this antenna is flat. It is not a coil. It is not a loop. It is a flat zigzag. WB2GXM.
And radio-wise, that's still good, even though it's not wound as a coil. So there's various ways of making an antenna electrically a lot longer than its physical length. Zigzagging, sawtoothing, helical winding, loading coils, top hat capacitors, dropping down the ends at right angles. And each of these techniques for making the antenna physically shorter, as long as you're using low-loss material, does not lower the gain of the antenna. That's a hard one for people to believe. Lots of people believe that if you make the antenna 30% of the length, you're only going to have 30% of the effective capture area. The magic of radio is that that capture area keeps coming back once you hit resonance. The magic seven words of an antenna: resonate at first and then it will radiate. When you make it physically shorter, yes, the Q goes up. In other words, the bandwidth goes down. Instead of it being 150 KC wide and 80 meters, it maybe is only going to be 50 KC wide before you got to do some retuning. But other than that bandwidth limitation, you can still have full gain, full capture area with antennas that are shorter, and you've made it shorter by any of these techniques, and there's lots of techniques for doing it. Anybody have any further comments on all of the above, particularly this article in the latest issue of CQ Magazine on what I think you could say is the sawtooth antenna? K2RI, W in the TechNet.
And to me, I was a comment, Dick.
Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, you know what you just said about the Q going up made me think, because what Craig may want to do from the west window to the tree, and see what you think, a 9-to-1 onion to set the impedance down, and then from there he could use an automatic antenna tuner. I've never played with them, but I know a lot of people have them. LDG Electronics, whatever they call themselves, LDG. They make automatic antenna tuners that will handle a couple hundred watts, and they're not expensive. Back to you, Dick.
The 9-to-1 Balun you're describing has two output leads. One's going to go to the wire of the antenna. Where does the other one go, Rich?
No, I didn't say Balun, an onion.
Okay, how many output leads are on the onion?
Well, I don't know. I've never made an onion, but I assumed, maybe I assumed incorrectly. But still, he has to have a way of going from the wire to convert to coax. At a 50 to 100 ohm impedance. Then he can go into an LDG. And those tuners can hook to a radio. They memorize the frequency. So when he goes back, he doesn't have to retune it all. It's automatic.
Yeah, I know that some of the articles that have been in the doctor is in QST magazine have shown techniques for getting lots of bands on a particular wire antenna with the right kind of a balancing device. That's one approach. But once you know the impedance of your antenna, its inductance, its resistance, and you plug that into the formula that you get from Berkeley, you go to you Google the word Berkeley plus impedance match. And that program will ask you what's the impedance of your antenna, what's the impedance of your source, which will say 50 ohms from the transmitter, what's the amount of reductance, what frequency you're on, you press go, and in 10 seconds it gives you a whole lot of solutions. And to build that LC network does not use expensive materials. The coil, you're going to wind to get the right number of nanohenries or microhenries. That's easy. The capacitor that goes with it, a little bit of care is required there to select the right capacitor so it can take your transmit power. But it's an unpopular technique. Hams don't know about it, but it works like a charm. Those who have done it have done it very well. Anybody have any further comments on all of the above? Give me a call. That is right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Me, Dick.
Me, Dick. Who's me, Dick?
N2EO, it's me. What I wanted to say was, how about this approach? An Airdux coil, a large coil, one end to the NZ wire, a piece of coax with a shield going to the other end of the coil. The center conductor from the coax, tap it down toward the bottom of the coil. A simple auto transformer.
That's one possible approach. But the usual L network consists of the right size inductor, the right size capacitor in series. The transmitter feeds, let's say, the inductor. The capacitor goes to ground. The junction between the inductor and the capacitor goes to the wire antenna. That's the high impedance point. That simple L network, you choose the right size inductor, the right size capacitor. It simultaneously resonates the antenna and gives you the right step-up impedance. Both happen at the exact same time when you choose the right values. Once you know the impedance of your antenna by way of an antenna tuner or a calculation, the Berkeley program will tell you exactly what values to use, and it will work like a charm. A little bit of tuning of the capacitor, or maybe the coil that you're winding on a piece of a PVC pipe, and maybe the turns of the coil, you're going to squeeze it together or stretch it out a little bit to change the inductance. But by doing that minor variations, you'll eventually hit resonance and a perfect impedance match feeding the outer end of the antenna. That's the simplest approach. As I said, it's unconventional. Not many amateurs have done it, but those who have found it to be very successful. Anybody with any further comments, K2RIW listening.
Dick, what I'm trying to say is if he uses the coil as an auto transformer, where he taps down toward the bottom of the coil, he'll get within range so he can use an antenna tuner. Then he can run coax from that coil in his room and run it up to an automatic tuner like the LDG. It's cost effective, it's cheap. And this way, he doesn't have to worry about fiddling with a tuning coil and capacitor.
Okay, you're using your air duct coil as an auto transformer by tapping up on it. Center conductor goes to some number of turns up. The bottom goes to the shield of the coax cable. And the top of that coil goes to the wire of the antenna. That gives you the impedance step up. What gives you resonance? That in itself is not going to resonate the antenna, Rich. Go ahead.
Oh, I know that, Dick, but if he puts a tuner on there, between coax, from the coax to his radio, puts an antenna tuner in there, that'll bring it down exactly to what he needs. The purpose of the coil is to step down the impedance far enough that the coax coming from the center and ground of the coil will be able to use that antenna tuner. What do you think?
That's one possible approach. The center tap between the inductor and the capacitor that I described earlier also is an extremely high step-up impedance device. It doesn't look it. You don't see the turns ratio, if you know what I mean. But it gives you a high step-up. An L network will do that. There's lots of ways of doing it. With a little bit of experimenting, with other raw materials he's starting off with, one of them will work for him. By the way, Air Dux Inductors, I don't think that company exists anymore. Maybe you can find them on the internet, but I don't think you can go out and buy them anymore, Rich. Go ahead.
Probably not, but if you look on eBay, A-R-D-U-X,